This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. Before we get into it, let's take care of a little bit of business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder and their power hammer and all their attachments and all the stuff they do to make your work easier. Broadbeckironworks.com. They had an amazing Black Friday sale and a Cyber Monday sale. If those are not still up, you definitely got to go to broadbeckironworks.com. If the deals are still there, the deals are still there. If they're gone, I got you. All you do is you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. Bingo. I'm with you. I mean, these guys are the best. Many thanks to Ryan and the gang, Ben, all those guys. The customer service is outstanding and their products are great too. I want to thank my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. I just finished off heat treating some stainless, and then I just heat treated. I just dried out some wood for stabilizing. I'm in the midst with some walnut. I got to get some walnut. I am like walnutted out, and I'm using my Even Heat to dry the wood out so I can get them stabilized properly. So definitely go check out the Even Heat, get the solid state drive, get the tap control. I mean, you can't make it happen unless you got an Even Heat, you know what I'm saying? Next are my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Lawrence Lake is the man. He's got all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat treating ovens, all that stuff, anvils, all that. If you're in Canada and you're not using Maritime Knife Supply, shame on you. And if you're in the United States, you should be using Maritime Knife Supply. They're fantastic. Lawrence is the man. He's got great stuff, including great steels, including the 1080 hex bar, which for if you're trying to forge out some integrals, this is a great starting stock. It's an awesome stock. So definitely go over to Maritime Knife Supply. And then when you get a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off. Many thanks to Lawrence. He's supporting the organizations that I appreciate. New England School of Metalwork, Center for Metal Arts. That's, I mean, period. That's it. I'm with them. Next are my friends at Baker Forge, bakerforge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. They have all sorts of great steels, copper my, bronze my, sand my, all that stuff. And they'll teach you how to use it. They'll teach you how to grind it. They'll teach you how to heat treat it. They'll hold your hand the whole way. And then when it comes to etching it, before you start to think about etching it, go get a couple cans of the Grime Reaper. The Grime Reaper is their new degreaser that's fabulous. And then you, let's say you degrease that blade and you're just like, now what? And I tell you what, now what? You're going to get yourself some gator piss, G-A-T-O-R-P-I-S-S, gator short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. They have three different models. They have the OG Gator Piss, fabulous. They have the Gator Piss Max for your stainless steel, no more hot muriatic acid in the shop. And they have the Gator Piss Heavy for that deep, dark. You know what I'm saying? So definitely get yourself some of that exotic steels. I always do really well with them. And the great part about all those, copper shims and then you have their clad steel with a core in the middle is the copper and the bronze really kind of show you when you're in the middle of the grinding. So it's definitely awesome. And then you can also get the Gator Piss of my friends at Texas Farrier Supply. I just bought some stuff from Texas Farrier Supply. They have all your stuff. If you're a blacksmith, a bladesmith, farrier, however you identify, you can just put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 at TexasFarrierSupply.com and it peels off 10% off. I mean, it can't beat that. You know what I mean? Next are my friends at Total Boat. Total Boat, baby. Total Boat's my guys. They have great adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds. I love, and use exclusively their two-part epoxy and the dyes that are formulated for their two-part epoxy. I use their CA glue, which I love. Their CA glue, there's thin, there's thick, there's medium. I like medium. That's how I am. I don't like high highs and low lows. I like them right down the middle. Medium's dynamite. And their UV cure epoxy resin. I don't think it's epoxy. Their UV cure resin is outstanding. I don't even know the difference between epoxy and resin. You know what I'm saying? But let me tell you something. You squirt a little bit on, you hit it with the UV cure, and then boom, I used it today. This stuff is awesome. I love the Total Boat products. I especially love their Fathom. I made some hybrid handle material with that. And if you go to totalboat.com/fullblast, you're going to get You're going to get a direct link that gives you discount and gives me street cred. And I'm all in on the street cred. So definitely get yourself some of the Total Boat. And just remember, Total Boat, baby. As my man KJ Sauda says, Total Boat, baby. You know what I'm saying? All right, next are my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. It's G.L. underscore Hansen & Sons. They make beautiful Jakarta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy and pressure with pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio, Radio Worm, Jakarta, all that stuff, plus pheasant, quail, all sorts of trout. I mean, trout's up the wazoo, all that stuff. And you're saying, what is it? It's like, think about how they make micarta. Now, think about, instead of it being sheets, they're making giant slabs. And then they're cutting it across the cross cut. So they're sticking in all sorts of fabrics and dots and all this stuff. And then they're making it into this very elaborate, beautiful, colorful pattern. And then they're cutting off slabs. And then when they cut off those slabs, they make beautiful bookmatched handles for you. And I think they're pen turners using it. I wouldn't know. No pen turners are telling me otherwise, but I love it. And I think it puts some razzle dazzle in your ding dong. You know what I'm saying? So definitely get yourself some of that. I highly suggest the GL Hansen Jakarta. And the reason why is because people are asking me for it. My customers are asking me for it. So, I mean, they know. So get on the train, you know? Next, my friends at Tormek. I love the guys at Tormek. I had a great time with my dude, Carl Friends at Tormek. He came down from Texas and he did a doc. Hopefully in February, we'll see a nice short documentary. I'm psyched. I love those guys and I love the products. I've learned how to use the jigs. I love the jigs. I also use the scissor jigs, which I love. I'm sharpening every scissor I got. I love the scissor jigs. I love the axe jigs. I love all the jigs. And all of their products are compatible with older models. So they're not giving you some jive where it's like, oh, you got to get the new. Everything works. This is a very sustainable company. And I love the water cool sharpening system. I have three of them and I love them. And I love them and I love them. I have nothing better to say than I think Tormek's great. And feel free to send me a message over at Full Blast Podcast on Instagram if you have any questions. You can also send a message to Tormek underscore sharpening if you have a customer service question or a question about the products. They're super helpful and they are happy to get in touch with you. So definitely get yourself a Tormek. Stop playing. Now, all you guys in Australia are thinking, you know, Fader's talking about all this stuff and I don't know how to use any of it. Here's what you do. I want you to go to Nordic underscore Edge on Instagram, and they have a litany of classes that you can take before you have to buy. Don't buy it yet. Take a class. Maybe you might like the spoon carving they teach. Maybe you like the metalworking. Maybe you like the blacksmithing, the bladesmithing, the leatherworking. And then you can make the decision whether or not you're going to spend all this money on all this stuff. You know what I mean? So definitely check that out. And then also while you're there, if you wanted to get a file guide, their file guides are my favorite. I love the Nordic Edge file guides. They are really great. And I've been using them for a long time and they are bomb proof. So go to nordicedge.com.au, see what the fuss is about. Yeah. And then last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. They are the suppliers of superior abrasive products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, and crankshaft. Belts, grinding, cutting discs, lap discs, surface conditioning stuff. If you wanted to get the discs that they use to break into the Louvre, you gotta go to Phoenix Abrasives and say, hey guys, what's the disc that's going to get me into the Louvre? And then they're going to tell you. And then when you buy a grip of them, or as people have noticed, I say pile a lot. Usually, if I have more than one or four, I refer to something as a pile. I've been told that that's my word, my expression for a lot. So when you're going to get a pile of Louvre breaking in discs, go to phoenixabrasives.com, and then you can put in the promo code FB10, and you can get 10% off everything. So definitely check that out, and yeah, it's great. Listen, I want to thank all the companies that sponsor this podcast. I couldn't do it without you. It makes my life easier, and I know the people in these companies, and I really appreciate the hell out of them. Today's a weird one. This week's a weird one. Well, you know what? Let's make a judgment at the end, okay? I originally was supposed to have Matt Parkinson on. That's Sword Matt on Instagram. That's the owner of Dragon's Breath Forge. And we had some technical issues that made it impossible for me to upload the interview. So just to let you know, this time of year, what is it, the first week of December? It's madness over here at Fader Knives. And even if it wasn't the holiday season, I really kind of are very regimented in almost to the point where it's every day, every hour. You know, I have very specific times of things I've wanted to do and what I can do. I've said this on Knife Talk, the other podcast, number one knife podcast on this germ-infested planet. I've said that I don't feel like time is wasting. I cannot waste time. So I figured out this system in place in order to get everything I need to get done, including the podcasting, you know? So when I get to the shop, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm super focused and I need to get all these things done. After I ran the New York City Marathon, the guy who worked for me for a number of years, good dude, he gave me his notice. A bigger, better opportunities came to him. And I will say this, I will never, ever fault someone for trying to make their lives better. I think that if an opportunity arises and this is something that you want to do, I can never fault you for that. So we left on good terms. It's not the most convenient time, like a week, 2 weeks before the Christmas season starts. Really super duper not convenient to me, but at the same time, no, I don't harbor any ill will. And it's just, you know, makes my work harder, but at the same time, God bless you and all the things you're going to do. That said, so you can imagine getting ready for the Christmas season, holiday season, just me. Now my time is even more kind of compressed. And to the point where I do two podcasts a week. I do the Full Blast podcast and I do Knife Talk. And I'm very, very like strict about them. I feel very strongly about them. I come from I'm not going to say I'm a professional broadcaster, but I am such a huge fan of radio. And I love it when in radio, they don't take time off. They don't take days off or they'll have someone fill in. I love the fill-in host, especially on a holiday. Mark Malusis is my man. He does Thanksgiving Day on The Fan. I love those dudes who they are just jobbers. The fill-in host on a radio show in a holiday is probably the most unsung favorite person or the overnight guy because they are in it no matter what, right? So I feel very strongly about not taking time off unless something is crazy. Like I know that...
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
I took off the week after the marathon because my guy quit and I had to I was too overwhelmed I was exhausted and all that stuff. So when I schedule the podcasting, what we do is we'll podcast on Mondays. I'll do the Full Blast podcast. And what happens is I can upload the audio to my producer, Craig Lockwood, who's also my partner on Knife Talk with Mareko Amasi. As long as he gets it by Friday morning, it's fine. So if I record on Monday, if something happens on Tuesday, if something happens Monday, we can go to Tuesday. If something happens Tuesday, we can go to Wednesday. Thursday, we record Knife Talk, so it's really like I give myself a little bit of room just to make sure that on Fridays, you know, something's going up. Blah, blah, blah. So I had Matt come on, and we had problems on Monday, and then I said, don't worry, you know, we had some technical issues. Let's try it on Tuesday. We tried it on Tuesday. We did a whole episode that was great. Problem was I did not realize until it was done that the audio is corrupted. So his track was corrupted and I just cannot send out a video, an audio. And this is anymore. This is in the beginning. There'd be an echo, and I'd be like, oh, there's nothing you can do about it. Now, I just cannot handle it. So I listened to I felt like there was something going on. And because of the podcast suite we use, there's really no way to know if something's wrong until afterwards. And I listened to a little bit of it, and I could hear my echoing, and I was just like, oh. So we had to scrap it, and I decided to come in by myself. However, I think we might try something new today that might surprise you. We're going to find out. We're going to see. But this time of year, this is Wednesday. I got to my Wednesday. I'm in the weeds. I'm and loving it, by the way. I think that I'm built for retail the holiday season. I'm built for it. My father, I've talked to you before in the past, was a winemaker, and his busiest season was Christmas, no question about it. He made his version of, I'll tell you a funny story. So my dad was a winemaker in the Hudson Valley, and he pioneered white wine in the Hudson Valley at the perfect time in the 70s and 80s. And he used networking with it was the beginnings, the pioneer stage of the Culinary Institute of America, which was right down around the corner. The New York Times food section was growing in a certain way, and they were kind of really trying to, incorporate a lot of local stuff. So my dad was very involved with the CIA, Culinary Institute of America, and the New York Times. So Christmas time was crazy, and he made, he didn't call it champagne, but he made a sparkling wine, Methods Champenoise. Now, here's the funny thing, and I try to make the comparisons I make with me and my father are, there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of not similarities. One is our temperaments totally different. He was a really kind of a tough guy and not super cold, not very loving, but at the same time, I learned so much from him. And one of the things I learned from him that I think I've brought over unconsciously into the knife world was when he started making wine, he had no pedigree as a winemaker. It's not like he ever worked in a winery before. He bought this farm. It was filled with cows. He hated the cows. The cows hated him, which he told on his, in various articles and stuff. And then he decided to create a vineyard. This is back in the 70s. So he made friends, and he went to Cornell, and he talked to the people at Cornell. He had friends in the Finger Lakes, which is a big winemaking area. He went to he went to France. He learned how to make wine in France. However, he was not well regarded outside of New York, and a lot of winemakers really kind of looked down on this guy because they're just like, they thought he was like some sort of, just this concept of, I'm holding up the air quotes, of a gentleman farmer's bullshit winemaker. And he didn't give a fuck. And when people would come in to drink the wine, they'd say, they'd feel embarrassed. They'd say, I don't know if this is good wine or not. I don't know about good wine or not. And my dad would say stuff like, listen, if you like it, it's good wine. Don't listen to these fucking guys. Don't listen to these guys. I feel as though he really felt of himself as an outlaw in the winemaking world, a rebel. He didn't give a fuck. All these guys with a lot of pedigree would come to him because he learned how to do it on his own, and he learned, obviously it helped, but through experience, he became the pioneer of this particular wine in New York State. However, he really thumbed his nose at the wine community at large. And funny enough, he really didn't. I don't know the extent of his palate, but I know that I never saw him drink wine ever. I never heard him talk about wine ever. He drank scotch. I know exactly what he drank. He drank Dewar's White Label. That's what he drank. Not a lot. Just a glass of scotch at night. That was about it. He wasn't a big drinker, but he wasn't like, he would never talk about wine. He got sick of it, frankly. And I feel I unconsciously have the same thing with the knife world. I learned on my own. I did take some classes, but at the same time, I didn't, I was very blasé about it, and I also am very much along the lines of, I want people to have my knives, and there's a lot of similarities And one of the things is I don't give a fuck what a lot of the knife makers in the knife making community have to say. I find them all, you know, very similar to the way my father was in regards to the wine making community. I think that I'm very similar in the knife making community. I'm friendly with them, but at the same time, I roll my eyes when I hear a lot of stuff. And, you know, I want to give people what they want, and I want to, you know, no bullshit. And he was the same way. So when he started making sparkling wine, it was like a champagne, but it's delicious. Now the problem is with champagne is it's only really champagne if it's made in the Champagne region of France, right? And he didn't really, he's in Dutchess County, New York, not anything. So he used to make jokes saying, if I show up in France, they're gonna fucking throw rocks at me. As soon as I get off the plane, because they think that I'm saying champagne. He ended up on his label having Method Champenoise, which was like his little workaround to make sure people knew what they were talking about. But the thing is at Christmas time, he was getting murdered. Liquor stores in the area needed cases of wine. The restaurants in the area needed wine. People were coming into the winery to buy champagne and wine for Christmas and New Year's, our sparkling wine, whatever. And he was slammed. You know, I remember those years of being like just crazy. I'd help him in the tasting room. I'd help him in the winery. I'd help him when he needed it. But I just remember it was like preparing yourself for total onslaught. And my sister, who I talked about, a number of episodes ago, had a bookstore named Three Lives. And Christmas season in their place was like a slaughterhouse. It was lines around the block and can't keep books in stock and just constant, you know, Christmas time was like retail insanity. I just remember there were these months of just craziness. And I think I went down to help them a few times, but at the same time, they didn't really want my help. But I grew up in, and then when I started getting jobs, I worked in the restaurant industry. And I remember working for Christmases and Thanksgivings, and I worked New Year's. And I just remember the onslaught of customer service during the holiday season, and I'm just used to it. So when I started making sculpture, I would get commissions for Christmas presents, and you know, you get a couple lures here, a couple sculptures there. It wasn't a big deal. I got to chill out a little bit. And then when I started making knives, I really wanted to kind of also be part of the Christmas, you know, I didn't want to say no to people. So this year I am in the weeds, but I feel comfortable doing it though. We're doing this great thing where we're reaching out to our customers. We have a 25% discount on Fader Knives. I think we're going to hold on. We're going to keep going with it. There's stuff available, and then there's stuff that's not available. But the stuff that's not available, it's a fast turnaround. However, I'm on my own, and I'm turning them around by myself, which is, you know, I'm working on about 50 knives. And I'm knocking out 10 in a row, baby. I'm working hard. I love it. But the problem is I need to, not a problem. I need to budget my time because I want to make sure I also podcast because this is part of the business. A lot of podcasters, they see podcasting as an opportunity for them to get away from their wives or their girlfriends. They go into their shed, they get their beer, they smoke their pot, they do all their things, it's like the clubhouse. For me, I respect the medium of broadcasting and podcasting so much that I feel very strongly about making sure that there's something going on. So we tried podcasting Monday with Matt, didn't work. Tuesday's episode was ruined, and he was like, "Want to do it again?" And I said, "I can't do it. I cannot do two exact same interviews at the same time." So we're going to circle back in January. There's a lot going on with Matt. I know that the Mystic Knife Show is going to be a big deal, and I would highly suggest going to follow Sword Matt and get involved with the Mystic Knife Show. Matt's also doing a lot of great things for charity. He's making knives, and then he's got one of his charities is revolves around autoimmune disease, and he's very involved with that. He has it. So we're going to be supporting the Mystic Knife Show probably in the beginning of the year. I'm going to be running ads for it. I'm doing it out of the kindness of my heart. I mean, my kindness of a dark ass heart. You know what I'm saying? I'm all in. But the crazy thing is like, I love this season just because it's the days just rip and you're either on or you're not. And I feel very strongly about the Christmas season. I feel strongly about trying to really tuck into making this business better and figuring out ways in which to be more efficient. And the experience is what makes me, I wouldn't say fearless, but like ready to make the mess. Back in the day, my business partner, Tony, and I ran this restaurant called Alva. And we had the office used to say to us, if you have to double book a party, double book a party, make the mess. And we would make the mess. The thing is, you make the mess, bring people in, but you got to clean up the mess at the end. So the whole thing is we're working full blast over here, so to speak. And it's a lot of fun. Now, I was thinking about today's episode and I was thinking about just Christmas and holidays. And I thought about the fact that I don't really remember the last time I had a lot of, chill out time for the Christmas season. I've started Fader Knives probably, I started making knives around probably 12 years ago and I was selling them around 12 years ago. So I remember Christmas times I'd get asked for projects or products and stuff like that. So I know that every Christmas for the past 12 years, I know that I've been working hard to make knives to the point where I had a customer come in today who every year buys knives for a family for the past 12 years. Guy's been coming to me every Christmas. So it's been a lot of fun. I got a lot of traditions, and I was thinking about the work, but it's been hard for me to kind of think about, how I was for Christmases when I had a young child. And what I thought might be fun, and I don't know if it's going to work or not, we're going to find out, is my daughter Lila, who's been on the show before. She's out in California. She's finishing up her classes. I think she's finished her classes. And I thought it might be fun for me to call her on the show. We'll see if she picks up and we'll see what's going on with her and kind of reminisce about the holiday season and, see what's going on with her. And then I thought we would do is we'd give her a call. So let's see if we can give her a call and see what happens. It's ringing. We'll see.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
It's Dad.
How are you? I know.
Okay.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm just studying for finals.
Oh, I thought you were done with classes.
No. Well, yeah, I'm done with classes, but I have tests.
Oh, boy. I hope I'm not interrupting anything.
No, I'm on a break.
You're on a break? What's going on?
I'm just hanging out outside. It's a nice day.
It's a nice day in California, right?
Yeah.
Are you getting ready
what
for...
What are you doing?
Well, I'm podcasting. I'm in the show. I thought I'd call you and say hi.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Never forget. I was thinking about like Christmases and stuff like that, and I'm so excited that you're coming home soon.
Me too.
I am like every time this winter break comes around, it's like usually the longest time you're going to be home. And for me, it's always a countdown of like, and this is the third year you've been in college. And it's just like every year, it's like, I am by December 1st or by Thanksgiving, I'm just like, I turn to your mom and all I can think of is, I cannot wait for her to come home. We're going to have so much fun.
Aw, I'm so excited.
And you got
I can't wait.
And you got a big birthday coming up.
I do.
I cannot believe you're going to be 21.
21.
What is that? How does that song go?
You know that song. You know how to make me sing it.
21 for me, baby. Isn't that what it goes?
No.
No?
No.
All right. So I get to buy you your first alcoholic beverage.
Yes.
Your first.
Can't wait.
Yeah, your first.
Yeah, I've never had any alcohol.
Yeah, you've never. I like how you slurred it. So you're like, I don't have any alcohol.
How dare you?
I remember I bought you a drink in Barcelona. I bought you a couple drinks in Barcelona. We had some fun in Barcelona.
All right. Yep.
All right, I won't bring that up. But I'm so fired up. You know what? Your aunt's excited. Carrie's excited for your birthday, and we're gonna. I think Jill bought a bottle of champagne for your birthday. We're gonna celebrate your birthday, and we're gonna. I have a surprise for you that I'm not gonna tell you about, but it's gonna be, you know, I got some stuff for you for your birthday. We're really excited.
I'm so excited.
Do you?
I can't wait to come home.
Do you have any early Christmas memories that you remember?
I know what you're going to say.
I have one of you that might be my favorite Christmas thing of all time.
Go ahead.
You must have been like, I guess like 4 or 5. And you were 3 or 4. You were tiny. You were tiny. You didn't even have long. Your hair wasn't even that long. And your mother and I had such a good time bringing in little Christmas trees. Because, I mean, it's just like with Christmas trees, it's like the needles get all over the place. And it's such a production. So we get these little Christmas trees and we just get all these presents. And I remember you totally believed in Santa Claus. You totally believed. Mm-hmm. And then the last year that I thought there's just no way she's going to keep believing is we put you to bed and you were in your little pajamas and you were tiny and we put you to bed and we ran downstairs to wrap the presents and put them under the trees. This is before we had dogs. And I remember we're putting it on and it's really nice and we're excited for the next day. And all of a sudden, I turn around, and there you are standing by the bathroom, like into the living room, and you're rubbing your eyes, and you're just like, "What are you guys doing?" Meanwhile, your mom is packing under the tree with all these trees, and I don't know what came over me, and I thought, "I'm gonna speak like a ghost. I'm gonna speak like a ghost," and I said. Oh, Lila, you're dreaming. You got to get back to sleep. This is dreaming. You're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, you're sleeping. And I don't know how it worked, but you just turned right around. I brought you right back upstairs. You went right back to bed. And the next morning, I'm like, she knows. You had no idea. I convinced
no clue.
I convinced you that you were dreaming. I was unbelievable. You remember that at all?
I do remember that. I remember that very well. I didn't, you know, I think I might have been a little bit older than 4 or 5, but maybe.
You know, we weren't those parents who were like.
I guess I was pretty little.
We weren't dragging that Santa Claus bullshit out till you were like fucking 12 or 13. I mean, you figured it out. Do you remember when you figured it out? Go ahead.
Is because I realized mom had the same wrapping paper as Santa Claus, and I was like, that just doesn't make any sense. And then 1, 2, 3, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, it's done. Dunzo.
I remember your mom.
I believed your stupid hypnosis. Unbelievable.
Were you like,
believe it.
Were you pissed or were you like?
Well, I think what I thought was that I remember when I was a kid, sometimes you'd say like, oh, this is from like us or like this is from Santa Claus. I think I just thought you guys were putting like the gifts you got me under the tree.
Yeah, see, I never figured that out. Like, I remember when I would go to the family holidays and I would notice there was something and it said from Santa Claus. The wrapping paper was the same, I was not as smart as you were. I was totally just like, wow, Santa Claus gets wrapping paper the same place everybody else does. He's like a regular person.
I think I thought he was too, like, he would have had he would have had his own stuff.
Mom
would always give, she would always like have a distinction.
That's right. Your mother is, I mean, in terms
she's
of.
She's the best gift giver.
In terms of gift giving, there is nobody better. And I know she sends you care packages every.
They're unbelievable.
Every few weeks she'll say to me, can you go to the post office? Can you go to the post office? And I'm like, oh, you got it. Whatever you need. And you're sending all this stuff. I'm looking through it. I'm like, God damn, this is the greatest mother of all time.
Seriously, it's true.
I remember the funny thing is like, and I don't, I guess you weren't as afraid as I was and your Aunt Jenny was. Both of us were pretty terrified of the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus to the point where we both had the same exact thing happen. Our father, when my sister Jenny was very young, Jenny, I guess my dad pretended to be the Easter Bunny And he called the house, and Jenny's mother says, "Oh, Jenny, the Easter Bunny's on the phone. He wants to talk to you." And Jenny freaked out. She's like, "I don't want to talk to the Easter Bunny. I don't want to." And he's outside, and she's like, and she's freaking out, and she's like, "Oh, don't worry, the Easter Bunny's not coming. Easter Bunny's coming. The Easter Bunny's not coming." And my sister had a total panic attack, right?
Oh God.
So fast forward, Jesus Christ. I mean, like 20 years or no, 18
Literally,
years
Jesus
later.
Christ. And
18 years and a different wife. My dad thought it would be a good idea to try it again with me and Santa Claus. And he had these sleigh bells, and my mother woke me up, and it was Christmas morning, and my mother said, "I think Santa Claus is still here." And my dad goes in the downstairs with these sleigh bells. He's shaking the sleigh bells. He's going, "Ho, ho, ho." And I was, I freaked out. "No, get him out of here. I don't want the man in that house." I had a total panic attack. And,
oh, God.
And the funniest part was my sister and I, you know, we did not have the same upbringing at all, but we had the exact same reaction to the misguided, the misguided deeds of our father.
Why do you think he wanted to make that work so much? Do you think he wanted you guys to be terrorized, or he thought it was going to be like childhood enjoyment?
I'll be honest with you. I think my father wanted the glory moments, but he didn't think things through, you know, like the easy wins. Like in his mind, he's going to be the hero without having to really do anything heroic. You know, I'm going to be, you know, it's just like, I'm going to dress up in the Spider-Man costume and like, you know what I mean? It's like, as a parent, I think that he was going for the low hanging fruit, but he really wasn't thinking very clearly. And you'd think that after the terrible experience my sister had, totally panic attacked by the Easter Bunny, you'd think that he'd have the foresight to say, "This didn't really work well on my first child. Let's not try it on the third." You know what I mean?
But third.
What makes things worse is my dear sister, your wonderful aunt, rest in peace, loving Jenny the pornographer. I'll have to get into that someday. I can't even talk about Jenny. We found out that Jenny, the pornographer, my sweet dear Jenny, used to go into the bottom of Three Lives bookstore. And when I would come when I was very young, she would put a Mickey Mouse mask on, stand at the basement of the stairs of this dark bookstore, and she would say, "Hey, Jenny, it's Mickey, Jeff, it's Mickey Mouse, come down here." And I would look down this dark staircase for this little dwarfish person wearing this plastic Mickey Mouse mask
and stupid overalls
and shrieking at me, and I had a panic attack about that. Like, that was just like, you'd think that Jenny the pornographer would have figured that out. By the way, so Jenny the pornographer, my dear sweet sister Jenny, who I'm sitting in the car right now, in your car, while I record this, I had a lot of nice conversations with, I'm still getting messages from Jenny's friends and people who knew Jenny, who listened to the episode that I did of her. She was obsessed with eBay. You don't know this. And it was like the real birth. eBay was the birth of being able to have a virtual business, you know?
Right.
It's like the beginning stages of a virtual business. So she started selling books from her house, and then she'd send them, and she ended up making just a shit ton of money sending stuff on eBay. She would send books. She would send clothes. She would buy books. She would sell books. They made like, you know, she had a whole career off of this eBay store. So one time she sent us a message that she had been banned from eBay. And the reason why is because she was selling what they deemed as pornography. So we had such a laugh about Jenny. So it turns out she was just selling like a Robert Mapplethorpe book. You know, Robert Mapplethorpe did these, beautiful art books filled with like, you know, nude dudes and stuff like that. And,
right.
You know, all this nudity and stuff like that. And I guess it slipped through the cracks and it turned in. Somebody must have like, you know, ratted her out. And all of a sudden, I remember those days I called Jenny Larry Flint Jr. You know, my sister, the pornographer. But,
You know what's funny about that story?
Go ahead.
When you called me to tell me about that, because, you know, you found out about that, like, relatively recently, I was telling my friends, and they all thought that she was selling her own pornography there. I was like, God damn you, that's not the case at all.
Yeah, this is the only, you know.
Please, none of them know what she looks like. She would never do something like that. But it's just funny to think about
that. Well, it's because you come from the OnlyFans generation, where, like, that's what everybody.
I guess that's what they thought.
Yeah, yeah, you're dopey friends of the OnlyFans generation, where they think that if you're selling pornography, it isn't. No one would think, if you said to me, you know, I remember it happening. I remember breaking your balls, but I got, like, you know, Swiss cheese brain. I completely forget about this stuff. Carrie reminded me. You know, that's the funny thing is, like, it's, you know, you'd think, oh, she got in trouble for, you know, pornography. Robert Mapplethorpe is, like, a very famous American photographer.
Right.
These books were not pornography. I mean,
They're
pushing the lines. But at the same time, it was hilarious because it's, you know, your generation just assumes that she's on, like, an OnlyFans page. Jenny,
yeah,
that's
hilarious.
Yeah, it's super funny. It's super, you know, and I like to, you know, in my mind, I'm going to just drag it down to the lowest common denominator. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to, like, say, oh, well, it was erotic art and Robert Mapplethorpe. I'm going to be like, yeah, Hugh Hefner Jr. over there. I love it.
That's really funny.
Do you have any other? Do you have any other memories from Christmas and stuff or holidays?
Well, I definitely remember that Christmas morning when I thought that, you know, when you hypnotized me back to sleep. but you know, Jenny was also, like, such a good gift giver.
Yeah.
She always had, like, she made, like, all the gifts were put into these nice little decorations, and they were all wrapped within a box within a box within a box, and it was all very elaborate. I remember she would send gifts like that. I remember when I was really young, and I think the first iPod Touch came out, and you got it from, like, Grand Central Station when they used to have the Apple Store there.
Yeah.
And then you wrapped it in, like, a La Placita newspaper.
Really?
Which, like, this, like, grocery store. Yeah, like in our area, kind of. And I remember you wrapped it in that, like, newspaper or whatever. And I just, that one I remember pretty well. I also remember, because my birthday is really close to the holidays, one year I wanted to have a big sleepover slumber party with all my friends.
Ugh.
And at the time, I feel like we went to Party City or whatever, and they had these, like little logos or, like, emblems, kind of, that they would, you know, make, like, plates and cups and napkins and all this. And they had this stupid, like, goofy owl graphic. Do you remember? And it became, like, the mascot of my birthday party. And, like, everything had this stupid owl. And it was, like, the most, like, random owl ever. And you, like, you even drew it on my birthday cake with, like, frosting or whatever. That was crazy. And I remember you were making a lot of sculpture at the time, and the kitchen had all this sculpture in it, and we were, like, sleeping under it, and it was crazy. That was so fun.
Well, that was, I was working on this giant steel sculpture, and I had nowhere for the paint to dry. And I had, so I dragged this monstrous sculpture into the kitchen, and I was working on it in the kitchen. Mom liked it when I brought, I had, when you were younger, I was working on paintings in the kitchen. And,
yeah, you'd always do, like, monstrous, you never, like, little dainty things, all these monstrous floor to ceiling things.
Yeah, it was, Mom loved when I, like, trying to transform the kitchen into, like, a painter's station, you know, like, she liked it. So the funny part was, when you had that birthday party, everyone was going to sleep in the living room. But apparently, we're not going to say names, but some of the kids were, like, afraid. So your mother said, hey, Jeff, will you sleep in the kitchen? And just to kind of keep them company to make sure everything's okay. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. So I slept under the sculpture in a sleeping bag. So the sculpture was this giant steel fishing lure that I was painting. I put it under the, I slept under the sculpture because that was the only room there was. And then the funniest part was, there was a cat. Our cat, was it Oscar?
Yeah, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Best cat of all time. Oscar was so curious about all the children that
he was like a dog. He wasn't really a cat.
Yeah. And I remember all of a sudden I heard this, Mr. Fader, the cat's touching me. It was like The cat would go to all the like sleeping bags and like sniff all the heads of the children. Aww. And one of the kids were not into it at all.
She didn't like it at all.
This cat's touching me. Do something. The cat's touching me. I'm like, God damn it. God damn it, Oscar. You got to get upstairs. And every so often throughout the night, the cat's touching me again. That was fun.
That's pussy shit.
Well.
R.I.P. Oski.
What you said was both in two times. It worked both ways. But, that was fun. Yeah, I always loved when you were younger, it was easier for me to enjoy Christmas when I was a fabricator because none of the fabrication jobs, whether I was at Fine Architectural Metalsmiths or at Paxton, their projects weren't holiday dependent, you know?
Right.
So we were working on railings and stuff like that, but like closer to the holidays, kind of things closed, you know, like job sites would close down a little bit. And after Thanksgiving, you know, a lot of job sites that were on would kind of slow down until after the holidays. And most of the railings we were doing were indoor railings. So we weren't doing a ton of outdoor work. And I know that all the outdoor work we were trying to get in the spring and then the fall, so we wouldn't have to work out in the winter. So I remember really enjoying the holidays more as a family because I wasn't during this kind of mania that I'm doing now with the knife making and, you know, all the different things we were doing. But I am so pumped for you to come home.
Me too. I'm so excited.
And I will tell you one thing. I might have to employ you in the shop for a couple days. And it's going to be easy stuff. I need help watercoloring. And I think that you might be on the, you know, it'll be like during COVID, one of the great moments, one of my favorite things of all time during COVID, you'd come to the shop and you'd do your virtual classes from the shop. And I'd be hand sanding and then I'd look over to you, you'd be on the big table and you were working on the funniest part was you were in the shop. It must have been close to the spring. And we had the doors open. I was hand sanding. I was being quiet. You were working, and then a squirrel came in. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember. But you were like podcasting, I think.
Oh, I was podcasting.
I think I was in the shop alone, or like you were on a call, or you weren't in the shop. And then the squirrel came in. I saw it run in and mess up all the stuff. It was like rummaging around in there.
There's too many animals in the shop.
Yeah, too many goddamn animals.
You got to see the snake.
I'll never forget the snake.
How funny was the snake? We're not going to go into that.
We don't need to talk about that right now. The 1 year anniversary of the snake, though, I guess that's in the spring.
Oh, that was pretty amazing. Oh,
that was unbelievable.
Go ahead.
I want to talk about it for a second.
Go ahead. All right, so let's just set it up.
That's so fucking funny.
Let's just set it up because there's a specific time in the year where these big rat snakes, these black rat snakes, they're coming in to look for rodents or they're coming in looking for something. They're coming in looking to warm up. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But 2 years in a row, at the exact same time, this fucking giant snake would come into my shop. Well, 2 years ago, I had John Ledford, who loves snakes, came and grabbed them. And then I was just like, well, I can't keep calling John all the time. So I got one of those grabbers, a snake grabber. And you happened to be driving me to the shop. And you videoed me removing the snake like a real fucking Upper East Side New York douchebag. Not a fucking country dude getting rid of the snake. A fucking Upper East Side kid from the 80s, New York City guy getting rid of this fucking snake. And so now I've set it up for you.
Well, I just remember how funny that was because I remember that day. I remember driving you to the shop and I think we were both like maybe in like not a sour mood, but we weren't like, you know, we weren't super excited. I think that, whatever.
We don't have a million cars, and you and I had to share the car, and I was, you know, and I think it annoyed you.
Neither of us liked it very much.
What'd you say?
Well, I said neither of us liked it very much.
Well, understandably. I mean, it's just like, the realities of the world. You know, it's like, you know.
So anyways, it's like a whatever day. It's probably shitty weather. And I remember driving you to work, and I was, like, kind of in an annoyed mood or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you open the fucking, the shop, and there's this massive snake there, like I've probably never seen. And I was losing my mind, and you were losing your mind. And then I remember in the first part of the video, you should repost it later. The first part of the video, you're like tough guy, like you got it, and then you like lob it over to like the woods or whatever, and then it like bites at you or something like that, and you like jump. It's just so fucking funny. And I remember the rest of the day we just kept texting each other and calling each other and just laughing about it because it's so funny.
Well, the best part was you were videoing it. You were scared, but the best part is you had one hand on the camera and one hand on the window of the car. So it looks like you were just ducking the camera, but you weren't ducking the camera. You were constantly moving the window up and down, which makes it so much funny. And for some reason, you thought that I was going to throw the snake into the car.
I was like, well, once you got a good hold of it, I was like, what if he tries to put it in, or dangles it in front of me and then it drops in the car, and then I would have lost my fucking mind. I don't know why I went there, but I was scared.
I understand.
So I had to protect myself.
I understand. In this day and age of being able to, you know, get a viral video going, dangling a snake and it dropping into the car would have definitely been...
years of AFV, I know a thing or two what to expect.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been the AFV. I would never do that to you. You'd never hear the end of it.
Oh my God. I would be traumatized.
Oh my God.
That would have been horrible.
You'd be like, sell
the car.
Do you remember, Dad? I'd be in my little chair, no hair, just like wrinkles and just old. And, hey, Dad, do you remember that time where you dropped that snake in the fucking car? You thought it'd be funny. And you traumatized me. Now I can't even, I can't even use a gardening hose anymore. I can't do any. I can't even tie my shoelaces. All I think of is snakes.
That's so funny.
Ugh.
Yeah, you broke the generational cycle. Tied it all back together.
I tried. You know what? I remember when Dad pretended to be the fucking Santa Claus. And I never did that shit. I know. I remember the trauma of traumatizing my child. I would never do. I never did anything that bad. Trauma. I did do one thing, and I learned my lesson. We were playing. You were very young, and we were playing. I don't know. It might have been Candyland.
No, it was Candyland.
Candyland.
I remember.
Now you remember. And I don't know what possessed me, and I got a little bit too competitive. Fucking Candyland. I mean, you can't. I'm getting competitive with my baby daughter playing Candyland. What kind of fucking maniac am I?
I don't know.
And then I won, and then I started singing the We Are the Champions.
Yep.
But I sang I Am the Champion, and I might have been pointing at you. I might have been egging you.
You were doing it all.
And then all of a sudden, you were smiling, and your smile immediately turned into a frown, and you started crying, and your mother just looks at me, and she goes, what is wrong with you? And I remember, I'd be like, I'm so sorry. And I never did that again. I don't know what came over me.
No, you never did that again.
I just figured.
Every time I hear that song, I always think of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I ruin that fucking song for you?
No, but that's how I learned what that song was.
Now you're like a Queen, like, aficionado.
Yeah, I do like Queen. But yeah, that was probably one of my earlier memories.
Oh, God.
I was really young.
I am so sorry.
Don't be sorry.
That is
it was funny.
That is
horrendous. It was hilarious. I think I forgave you pretty fast.
I know, but I felt, I mean, you're making a child cry for like, is
you're bored. I don't know. Maybe your brain wasn't fully developed yet.
Maybe you're right.
I don't know what was wrong with you.
I don't know what was wrong with me either. That is just madness. That is madness. You know, the funny thing is my dad didn't learn how to not traumatize his children, but I learned to not do that again. I don't think I ever did that again.
No, I don't think you did either. I feel like after that, you were really, like, cautious with me. I mean, I was pretty young.
Can you imagine a fucking 30-some-odd-year-old man, like, singing I Am the Champion to a like a 4 year old, 5 year old.
I was really little.
That was like, so funny. That was mad. I mean, that is like madness. Total madness. Oh, I'm so sorry. Jesus.
It's okay, I forgive.
That's the reason why, yay, listen, if that didn't happen, I probably would have dropped the snake in the goddamn car. You know? Right? If I didn't learn.
That's funny.
If I didn't learn about cruelty to children at that young age, I would have dropped that guy.
At the young age of 30-something.
I would have probably dropped the snake in the car and held the door closed. You know, who knows?
God.
You never know. I might not have learned the, you know, empathy or sympathy for my own child.
At 30. Well, you know what they say. Apparently, people's brains aren't developing until they're 30 anymore.
That was some non-developmental decision making.
That was crazy. Well, at least you didn't drop the snake in the car. Glad you learned that early.
I was. I just didn't want to hurt it. Really, I felt very like.
I know. I was scared for it.
Yeah, but it's fine. I mean, it got back in the shop, lickety split, and I let him.
Made a bunch of eggs.
I mean, I just have to.
As long as they don't go in my car, I don't care. I care a little for you.
Well, you know, we'll figure it out. So, is there anything you want to do when you come home?
I want to go to Uncle Giuseppe's.
Oh, I know. You love Uncle Giuseppe's.
That's my favorite.
Uncle Giuseppe's, if you're not on the East Coast.
If you're not in the tri-state area.
All right. So, it's basically this. It's like, imagine the biggest supermarket. Like as big as like a Whole Foods or something, but it's all Italian American stuff. And it's like,
It's
madness. It's total madness. And Christmas time, it is totally, completely madness. So I know that's your favorite place. There's one in Yorktown Heights. So you're going to go there. You and I got to do a trip to Chinatown.
Oh, yeah. We always do that.
We got to figure out a place to go for Chinatown. Fun. Oh, you and I might have to do some. Car, I'm gonna enlist you to help me work on Jenny's car because we got to change the battery. We have to fix the mirrors, and I think maybe you and I could do it together.
Okay, sounds good.
And then I have another plan. You and I have to do some painting together. I feel as though we need some watercolor classes together. So we're gonna do some. You're gonna be doing it with me. We're not gonna go take a class.
Yeah, of course.
But we're gonna do some watercoloring because I think you need it.
Fun. I think that would be great.
It'd be fun. In the shop, it's a lot of fun. I clear the big table off, and if you feel like you're in a real, you know, you don't feel like you're in the kitchen. You know, it's a great place to make art, so we'll do that. Anything else? You excited? Congratulations. Is it all a done deal? Are you going to Japan in the spring or no?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm going to Tokyo. Look 2026.
Look at you. So tell me about your course. Congratulations, by the way.
Well, thank you. Well, basically, I'll be, like, enrolled in a university, and I'll take classes, you know, that are about, like, my major. A lot of, like, architecture and urban planning, and then I'll have to take some Japanese, but I've already been studying it for a while. And, yeah, I'll be living in kind of like an apartment, have my own bathroom and stuff. And, yeah, it'll be awesome. I'm so excited.
Wow.
I'll be right in time for cherry blossom season, apparently. So
somebody told me that. So who told me that? Somebody told me. I think one of your mother's friends said that. So that's so exciting. Oh, you know what it was? It was Meredith Hart. She wants to get in touch with you because she's a local artist in Peekskill who's a big Tokyo person. So, but that's so exciting. And, you know, I'm so proud of you because, you know, you really did it all yourself. You know, it was not easy to get into. It wasn't just like, I'm going to do it. You got to apply for it. And it was a whole production and you did a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm about to take my Japanese final on Friday, so, you know, wish me luck.
What's good luck in Japanese?
I don't know. I was trying to remember.
Oh, jeez, you are screwed.
Me, so.
Yeah, you're screwed. You're screwed. Oh, my God. I bet you know dropping a snake in a car in Japanese.
Nope.
All right, well, let's hope that neither one of those are on the test. Well, listen.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Well, listen, I can't wait to see you. We're going to see you in a couple weeks. I'm going to let you go. I'm so proud of you. I can't wait to see you, but I'm really proud of all the hard work you've done this year. You really, really never cease to amaze me, and I'm just so proud of you, and I love you.
I love you, too. I can't wait to see you, too.
All right.
Well, and your birthday's coming up. You're getting a special gift.
Yeah, when this comes out, yeah, my birthday's on the 6th, so 52. Geezer time. Geezer yep. time. Geezer time.
Do you think, would you like it if I showed up to the airport dressed as Mickey Mouse?
No, I think you should just get on the plane and just arrive. You know, don't try to, you know, I'm not, I'm going to be driving, I think I'm going to pick you up in the Prius. So I have to do some work on the Prius to get it ready for to pick you up anyway. And yeah, driving to JFK, I don't know how much I'll appreciate you dressed up as Mickey Mouse. You might not get the laugh you're expecting if you're flying all the way across from California.
Jeez. That's what I'll get.
What?
Jeez.
All right, well, listen, I love you. I'll see you soon, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good rest of your show.
All right, love you, bud.
Love you, too. Bye.
Bye. Well, that worked out better than I expected. That was fun. That was fun. Lila's a good kid. I'm very fortunate. I'm very excited, and that was a lot of fun. I learned, you know, I figured out the whole this style of podcasting from her. She did a radio show, and she used her phone, and hopefully it sounds good. I think it sounded all right. It sounded good for my earphones. But maybe I'll do that more often. Maybe I'll do them more often. It's hard for a podcast to listen to people if the audio isn't awesome, but that was fun. That was really fun. And I'm excited. So, yeah, so Lila's coming home in a couple weeks, and I'm going to, you know, carve out time to make sure that, well, now that I don't have an employee, I can be a little bit more not as strict in regards to the shop, but I'm excited. She's a good kid. She really worked hard. I can't believe she's turning 21. That's crazy. Like, I still remember that time where she was little and she believed in Santa Claus. And now she can buy her own booze, which is like totally madness to me. But that was fun. That was a lot of fun. What else? So that was it. I think that's it. I think what we're going to do now is can't get much better than that. I'm not going to gild the lily. I think that was fun. And we'll see you next week. So next week, Ben Camone's going to come on. And who else am I going to have on? I'm going to have Fingal Ferguson towards Christmas. We're going to do a Christmas show. Every year I get Fingal on. We talk all the Christmas. You know how he talks also romantic all the time. So we're going to have him on. We're going to have Ben Camone on. Hopefully we might have Craig Lockwood. We're going to talk music. And we're going to see how it goes. But that was fun. Guys, that was fun, right? All right, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to follow the Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. Send us a message. Send what's going on. Support our sponsors. And also, go support Sword Matt, Dragon's Breath Forge. We're going to be doing a lot more with him in January. And blah, 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 blah. All right? See you next week. Thank you for everything. Bye-bye.